Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the lawyers when we come back. Well, many of the lessons that you hear on the Law Hour are just a small part of my two-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure, and this class includes lessons ranging from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, a summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, and write motions, briefs, and affidavits. And I don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, and what papers to file, how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, how to present your legal and lawful positions, and what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues or errors for appellate review. Now, in short, there are 28 essential elements that you must master in courtroom strategy and procedure if you want to be successful in court, and you'll learn all of them here at the law school in this class. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. And then, on top of that, it's free. So be sure to call and ask for yours. Courtroom strategy and procedure. Our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. That's not free. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about lawyers. So far, we haven't had anything good to say about one. And that's because lawyers are the brunt of every joke, and Jesus of Nazareth never had a good word to say about a lawyer, a banker, or a preacher. So if you're in one of those three occupations or professions, you might consider changing. It's called repentance. You can repent anytime you want to. Now, that doesn't mean that every lawyer, every banker, or every preacher is a bad guy. And once in a while, you'll run across a good one. Ron Paul is a politician. There's not very many good politicians. I don't have very much good to say about a politician, but once in a while, we have one like an Andrew Jackson or a Ron Paul, a Helen Chenoweth. Once in a while, there's somebody that gets into the halls of Congress that's honest. Not many, but once in a while. And that's why I'm opposed to, and I don't care what other people do, but I'm opposed. I wouldn't get out of bed to go vote, because when the system is broke, the way our system is broke, you're not going to fix it by voting. And that's because there's only two parties that are going to be elected. I mean, you can vote for a third party, but they're not going to be elected. So you can vote for Republicans or you can vote for Democrats. So in 94, we got tired of the Democrats, so we threw them out and we put the Republicans in, and I'll be darned if the Republicans aren't worse than the Democrats. I didn't think that was possible. I didn't think that you could replace the graft and corruption going on in the Democratic Congress with anything worse, and along came George Bush and the Republican Congress. Now, I'm not a political pundit, and I'm not here to tell you who to vote for. If you want to vote, you know, get after it. I don't want to slow you down any. But you're wasting your time, effort, and energy, because that isn't going to solve your problem. It isn't going to balance the budget. It isn't going to end the war in Iraq. The war in Iraq is coming to a conclusion, and the economy will run its course, and there will be an inevitable result that comes from it. Life goes on. Some people get burned, some people don't. Now, when we talk about law, we talk about, in this school anyway, we talk about how to avoid confrontations with the government. And that's because you can stay out of more trouble than you can get out of. Now, occasionally, we give a finger to a cop so that he'll arrest us and take us to jail so that we can create an issue that we want to take before the courts because we want a solution. We want a remedy for this problem. You see it going on right now in South Dakota. They just enacted a law up there concerning abortion. And nobody's hiding the fact. It's the legislature. They want to take Roe versus Wade before the Supreme Court of the United States. They want it repealed. So they enacted this law that's patently unconstitutional. Well, it's unconstitutional as it's been ruled upon over the last 30 years. So that's one of the ways that we create a constitutional confrontation so that we can change a law or so that we can get a new construction or a new policy. Individuals can do the same thing, and I've done it many times. Rosa Parks did it. She sat down on the front of the bus. The law said to sit down on the back of the bus. And when she sat on the front of the bus, they arrested her, took her to jail, and they argued the case. And the Supreme Court reversed that statute in Alabama and said, hey, wait a minute, that law is unconstitutional. So don't get mad at people when they get arrested and taken to jail. And don't get mad at the lawyers for wanting to take an issue through the judicial process to get a remedy. Now, I get letters every once in a while from people that are really bummed out about the judicial process. And whenever you read something in the paper, they're always blaming it on the judges. They don't blame it on the politicians. They don't blame it on the president. They don't blame it on the judges. They don't blame it on the courts. I think that that's misplaced. I think it's misplaced. I think that the President's Patriot Act is a conspiracy with the Congress to deprive you of your rights. And ultimately, the Patriot Act at some point in time is going to be brought before the courts, and they'll give us a ruling on it. Is the Patriot Act constitutional? Some portions of it aren't. Some portions of it are. And being able to bring in those unconstitutional portions, being able to bring in the issue that needs to be adjudicated, needs to be remedied, needs to have a new policy, that's the trick in all of this. Lay people simply don't have the skills and the ability to do that because our legal system, at least here in the United States, and I suspect that around the world it's probably pretty much the same, our legal system here in the United States is now an adversarial system. We don't have a justice system. And people will complain and say, well, there's just no justice here. Well, that's true. I mean, you know, that's like going to the zoo, and this particular zoo doesn't have any giraffes, and you walk in the zoo and say, you know, this zoo doesn't have any giraffes. Well, that's true. There's no giraffes in the zoo. Doesn't mean that it isn't a zoo. Doesn't mean that there aren't other animals there, but there aren't any giraffes. Well, we have a legal system in this country. We have a legal system that works. It functions very well. I'm not complaining about our legal system. I have a lot of students that complain about it. I'm not complaining about it. It's not correct. It's not biblical. It's not following the laws of God, but, you know, it functions and it works, and I know how to use it, and so I go out and I use it, and I'm not complaining about it. But I got a letter the other day from a guy that was complaining about it, so let me share this letter with you, and let's see if there's a solution to this guy's problem. The solution that they tell you about in school, in church, out on the job, it's to vote. Go vote. Or write a letter to the editor. Or write a letter to your congressman. Well, go ahead. I've done all of that and never accomplished diddly squat, so I quit doing that. I found that when I went into court, I could get a remedy. I found that by finding out what the law is, what the law really says, that I could do something constructive for George Gordon. I can't do anything for Joe Sixpack, you know, or Sally Housewife out here, but I can do something for George Gordon. Now, this is Jack. Jack says, I live north of the 49th in a little town on the border called Osoyoos, O-S-O-Y-O-O-S, I guess that's Osoyoos, in British Columbia. Have you ever had any students from Canada using your procedures here, or perhaps with any success? Thank you for your consideration and your wonderful website. Thank you, Jack. I like to be stroked. He puts down a postscript and he says, I've been in court numerous times on tax and different trumped up, I'm going to underline that, Jack, trumped up criminal issues. All my requests, demands for reasonable disclosure are ignored, and I am always left holding the short end of the stick. I'm going to underline this. I am always, always. That means that you don't ever prevail in court. You don't ever succeed. My current opinion, for what it's worth, is that they are a den of vipers. That's a direct citation that came right out of the mouth of Andrew Jackson, speaking of the bankers back in 1836, who cannot and will not play fair. There is no accountability. I'm going to underline, will not play fair. There's no accountability. I don't know what accountability means. So this last sentence, there is no accountability. I don't know what you mean by that, Jack. And you mean the judges aren't accountable? Accountable to who? I don't know. So let's just leave that sentence out. So I'm just going to draw a line right through. There's no accountability because I don't think it adds anything to the subject matter. Now, let's try this one again, boys and girls, in case you've got attention deficit disorder. I've been in court numerous times on tax and different trumped up criminal issues. All of my requests, demands for reasonable disclosure are ignored, and I'm always left holding the short end of the stick. And my current opinion, for what it's worth, is that they're a den of vipers who cannot and will not play fair. All right. Well, now, my name is George Gordon, Jack, and I've got just exactly the opposite view. And the answer is yes. You people that live in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, you people are Anglo-Saxons, and you practice Anglo-Saxon administration, which comes right from Magna Carta. And our laws are predicated upon Magna Carta. Did you know that? The principles of law that we use in Anglo-Saxon administration. Now, it is true that we're in the process of changing those to the Roman civil law. Now, right here, I want to pause. Don't forget Jack. He can't get any justice in Canada. Another guy wrote me a letter, and he said that, I've listened to most of your law shows in the archives. How about a show on history, or the history of our legal system, the history of how our legal system was adopted using parts of the European system, and what our founding fathers had in mind when they set up our original system, and then possibly the change from the system to find the truth to the adversarial system that we're now stuck with. Thanks for all the information. If you retired in the morning and dropped off the face of the earth, you'll have changed my life and viewpoints more than any other person's. This is written to me by a fellow named Garrett a couple months back. Thank you, Garrett. God, I love to be stroked. So Jack and Garrett are both stroking me. Tell me what a great guy I am. I walk on water every other Wednesday. Now listen, Garrett, let's take you and Jack together. Jack can't get justice, and you'd like to know, why is that? So would everybody else. Well, what did our founding fathers intend? Well, believe it or not, here in the United States, our founding fathers intended that we follow the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments. They wrote 22 principles of law into our federal constitution here in the United States that come from the Ten Commandments. Did you know that? 22 principles of law. In fact, our founding fathers gave us a republic rather than a democracy. And they did that with premeditated forethought and with a lot of consideration and with real reason and purpose. Now, of course, today we're told that they all made a mistake and they were a bunch of old fogies. They didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And we've got revisionist historians that are rewriting our history for us here. But I just wanted to let you know that, you know, since you asked me the question, Garrett, what did they have in mind? They had the Ten Commandments in mind. In fact, I forgot who it was that said this now. I don't know if it was George Washington or James Madison. One of the founding fathers made this observation. He said that the Constitution of the United States is written for a moral people. Moral people. Well, listen, where does this morality come from? Bill Clinton? Monica Lewinsky? George Bush? What do you think our founding fathers had in mind, or that particular founding father, when he said that the Constitution of the United States is written for a moral people? Morality, boys and girls, comes from God. Morality comes from the Ten Commandments. Morality comes from God Almighty. That's what morality is all about. When you practice the law of God, you're practicing a moral law. When you don't steal your neighbor's lawnmower, when you're not out banging your neighbor's wife, when you're not killing other people, or harming them, or destroying their property, or taking it away from, you are practicing morality. That's what morality is all about. He's a moral man. He doesn't go to Flo's whorehouse. He practices morality. He doesn't practice adultery. Now, that's what our founding fathers had in mind. Now, when we go back through our history, if you want a good history on morality and the Ten Commandments and the law of God and the secular law, it comes from a book called Blackstone's Commentaries. It comes in two volumes, written in 1757 by Lord Blackstone, an Englishman, English judge. And he explains and correlates these two sets of laws, that is the Roman civil law that we practice, like commerce, the Commerce Clause here in the United States, and the law of God, the Ten Commandments. You know, there's a law in the Bible, I think it's about, Deuteronomy 19:15 or something like that. It says, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. That's also repeated in the New Testament. All right, we in Anglo-Saxon administration in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Western Europe, the United States, we require that two witnesses come in and testify against somebody before we convict them. Two witnesses. I know it gets in the way of the administration of justice a lot of times, but, you know, that's the way God wanted it. And we practice that. Now, today in our traffic courts, it doesn't take two witnesses to come in and convict you for speeding. It just takes the policeman all by himself. He just comes in and testifies against you, and you bang, you're dead. And Jack here says, my God, they're not playing fair. Well, assuming, Jack, that the courts were playing by the rules of God, I guess they're not playing fair. But, Jack, they're not playing by the rules of God. Our courts do not operate under the rules that were set down by Moses. Our courts practice the rules that are set down by Arlen Specter and Dianne Feinstein, by our elected officials, the people that you voted for, the people that you sent to Washington. Obviously, Jack, the people that you sent to Ottawa to enact your laws must be superior to God because you're practicing the laws of Canada instead of practicing the laws of God. How do I know that? Well, listen to this. You admitted it right here in your letter. Listen to this. He says, I've been in court numerous times on tax and different trumped up criminal issues. Okay, stop right there. There's a period after issues. Jack says, I've been in court numerous times. Well, how did you get into court, Jack? Did you sue the IRS? Did you sue your government? Did you bring a petition or an action against some government official and haul him into court to argue some point of law? Well, I'll just bet you that they brought you into court. And that they allege that you didn't pay your taxes, or that you didn't do something that you were supposed to do, or that you did something that the law prohibits you from doing. Now, isn't that probably about the way that happened, Jack? So I said, you can stay out of more trouble than you can get out of. Now, I have this all the time. People will write me a letter like this. Jack, you're not unusual. I'm not complaining about the IRS. They're not hauling me into court. They're not complaining to me. They're not raising any trumped-up charges against George Gordon. Now, what's the difference between Jack and George here? Is it that I'm just lucky? My God, I'm on the radio. My telephone is tapped. My mail is opened. If there was any accusation, anything that government could bring against me, they would have already done it. I got to be very careful. The other day, a guy called on the telephone. And my daughter answered the phone, and he said, I need some legal advice. Fortunately, my daughter has been been informed that we don't do that here. People call quite often. And they say, well, gosh, if this is a law school, let me call them up and get some legal advice. Let me tell you something here, boys and girls, about legal advice. You see, legal advice is something that comes from a paid professional called a lawyer. It's a monopoly. And that monopoly has been enacted by lawyers who are politicians, representatives, and senators who have gone into the legislative process, and they have enacted laws to protect the bar association, that is, the bar lawyers, from any competition. So you think when you call me on the phone, well, I'm going to ask George Gordon what he thinks about this. And when you call me and say, well, what do you think about this? I say, well, gosh, I can't tell you. I can't give you that kind of legal advice because I'm not a lawyer. I'm not in the club. I'm not licensed, bonded, and insured. I don't have any of that kind of knowledge that you need. You can only get that from a lawyer. Same thing is true with doctors. And if I were to give you my opinion, do you know that I would be prosecuted for practicing law without a license? If I was a lay person and you called up and said, gosh, I pinched my skin and it didn't go down, it just stayed up. And if I said, oh my God, you're dehydrated, drink more water, I would be arrested and jailed for practicing medicine without a license. I would be diagnosing an ailment and prescribing a remedy. You can't do that in America. I don't think you can do it in Canada either. I think what happened to you, Jack, is that you've got a social security number, you went out there and worked, and you received some money. You got paid in unjust weights and balances, didn't you? Like Canadian paper dollars, or got a check or something, deposited your money in the bank, and then you didn't file or pay taxes on that money. Those aren't trumped up charges, Jack. Those are crimes. You can't have income and then not file tax returns. You can't have income and not pay taxes. Don't you know Jesus told you not to do that? Let me show you that. It's over here about Matthew 17 or 20, something like that. Let me get up here to Matthew. If you've got a Bible, just whip out your Bible here and see if I'm lying to you here about Matthew. Matthew 22. That's what it is, 22:15. Now listen to this story, Jack. Listen to this story. Here's Jesus. Now he says then went the Pharisees and they took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. Hell, that's what they're doing for me here. You know, they'll send some guy over and he'll call me on the telephone and say, Mr. Gordon, can you give me some legal advice? And the minute that I give him that legal advice, he'll be right out here to arrest me, jail me, and then prosecute me for practicing law without a license. How often do they do it? Well, I don't know. Once a month, twice a month, maybe. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, I'm constantly being set up like this. So don't think of a thing strange, Jack, that maybe you have been set up. In fact, your government, your legislature, you see, they never explained to you this principle of law. So if you've got ADD, now listen up, Jack. It's against the law, Jack, to use unjust weights and balances. Unjust weights and balances are paper dollars. God told you to use just weights and balances. Your government came along and said, God didn't know what he was talking about. Let's give you the Bank of Canada and paper money. And you said, right on. And you take their paper money, you take their checks, you use their credit cards, you use their credit, you use their unjust weights and balances, and you practice theft in violation of the eighth commandment that says, thou shalt not steal. See? And then probably you go to church on Sunday and pray to Jesus. Now that's a criminal activity when you do that. And if you want to know what the tax is on, the income tax is a tax on unjust weights and balances. It is the penalty. It is the punishment that you suffer for breaking that law. It's automatic. It's the way life is. Now, I don't have that. See, I don't have any income, Jack. I avoid income like I avoid adultery. I don't practice adultery. I used to spend a lot of time at Flo's, but I stopped doing that. I used to spend a lot of time in my bank and filling out bank statements and bank records and asset and profit and loss statements and borrowing money and paying interest. I did all that. I know how that works. But it's a criminal activity, and I had the same kind of results that you're having. I had the same kind of trouble that you're having. When I was breaking the law, I had the same kind of penalties. Then when I quit breaking the law, the penalties went away. There's a little bit more to it. Verse 16, so these Pharisees who sent out these undercover agents to entrap Jesus, they sent out to him their disciples with the Herodians saying, Master, we know that you're true and you teach the way of God in truth and neither care you for any man, for you regard not the person of men. Tell us therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not? People do that all the time. They write me a letter, they'll send me an email, they call me on the phone, they say, should we pay our taxes, Mr. Gordon? Should we pay our income tax? Well, I don't know. I don't pay income tax. If you pay the income tax, that's a criminal offense. That's an act of treason against God Almighty to pay the income tax. In fact, it's against the law for you to have income. Income is part and parcel of commerce. Commerce is called Canaanite trafficking in Scripture. Canaanite trafficking, that's commerce. Now, I don't know where you live, but where I live, we got a chamber of commerce here. I mean, people fighting and they want to join. They want to be a member of the chamber of commerce. They want to be Canaanite traffickers. Hell, they get in line. They want to line up. It's like going to a whorehouse, you know. On a busy night, you know, you got to line up. Take your turn. That's the way commerce is. Everybody's involved in commerce. Everybody has bank accounts and checking accounts and social security numbers and credit cards and mortgages on their houses and time payments on their cars. I mean, they just can't wait to get involved in commerce. They don't want to deal in property. They want to deal in profit. They don't want to deal in increase. They want to deal in income. Well, okay. So Jesus now, he kind of perceived their wickedness, and he said, well, why are you tempting me, you hypocrites? I do that once in a while. I get on telephone and I say, well, why are you asking me that question? You know it's a crime. Why are you tempting me? Why are you trying to get me to break the law here? So Jesus said to them, who's this image and superscription on the coin? And they said, Caesar's. Now listen, here's Jesus. He said, then render to Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. Now, let's just analyze that for a minute. Jack, when you're working in commerce and you're making income, you should render unto Caesar, the government of Canada, their due just taxes. If you want to join the club, you got to pay the dues. Now, down here in the United States, joining the tax program is voluntary. You do that when you join Social Security. In fact, our Supreme Court now has clarified the issue with three cases in the last 3 or 4 years. They said, if you don't have a Social Security number, your employer doesn't have to hire you. So what that boils down to is, if you don't have a Social Security number, you can't work in commerce. Well, who in the hell wants to work in the commerce? I don't. I stay as far away from commerce as I can get. I stay as far away from Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, checking accounts, banks, and bankers as I can get. If a banker is a criminal, why in the hell would you want to go do business with him? If a mafia don is a criminal, why would you want to go make a loan from one of his loan sharks? Oftentimes, I ask students here at the school, I say, when was the last time you did business with the Cosa Nostra or the mafia? And they'll look at you like you're stupid. Have you ever done business with the mafia or the Cosa Nostra? I'll look at you. No, that's criminal. Why, we wouldn't do anything like that. Let me ask you this. So how many of you do business with Chase Manhattan, Bank of America, or JP Morgan? Oh, well, yeah, they all raise their hand. Oh, yeah, we've got Bank of America card and MasterCard and credit cards, and oh, yeah, we got mortgages on our houses. You wouldn't do business with the mafia, but you'll do business with the banks? I tell you, boys and girls, Jesus had kinder words for whores and prostitutes than he ever had for a damn banker, and you're doing business with bankers? Again, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success here, Jack, but I don't think the crimes that you're talking about here have been trumped up. I think you went out and broke the law, and I think you got caught. And now you're pissed off. And now you're calling me, and you're saying, hey, what am I going to do about this? Now, you go on and say here, Jack, you say, all my requests and demands for reasonable disclosure are ignored, and I'm always left holding the short end of the stick, period. Well, Jack, let me tell you, in this country, I'm not familiar with Canadian law per se, but I can just about tell you how this is going to work. As I mentioned to you last time or time before, the Apostle Paul, if he was resurrected from the dead today, he could go up to Vancouver and practice law just like he did 2,000 years ago, right there in your courts in Vancouver. He wouldn't miss a beat. He would need to know the local rules. He'd have to brush up on a few little minor things here. But by and large, the laws of the Roman Empire of 2,000 years ago are the same laws that you're practicing in Canada today. It's the same laws that we're practicing in the United States, and it's the same laws that you people are practicing in Japan. And we know that you're practicing our law in Japan because we imposed it upon you in 1946. You remember that? We gave you a constitution, just like we're giving to the Iraqis. We're going to give you democracy. We're going to make you a client state. It's like you Canadians are a client state for the United States. So, bottom line here, then, is that the same law that we practice here in the United States is the same law that you're practicing up there, and our law is called the adversarial system. It's the Roman civil law. We don't practice justice down here, and I don't think you're practicing justice up there. It's a system whereby one side comes in against another side, and the objective is to beat them. We don't care who's right, and we don't care who's wrong. What we care about is winning the game. That's exactly the opposite from the scripture. Now, I'll give you a little illustration of the scripture. There was a guy that was out breaking the law, kind of like you were, Jack, and he was a Sabbath breaker. And you'll see the story. It's over in Numbers chapter 15. So you go Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, flip over to Numbers chapter 15, about verse 32. And it says, while the children of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man that gathered sticks on the Sabbath day. And they that found him gathering sticks brought him unto Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation. I think it was the day before yesterday I went through this thing of the Levitical priesthood. So here's a guy, he's out gathering sticks. He's probably a logger, and he's out here trying to bring in a couple of three extra turns here onto the landing and load out a couple of loads on Saturday. And the high priest servant or somebody, I don't know, could have been a citizen's arrest, saw him doing this. Now we've got a law, it's number 4, Ten Commandments. We've got a law that says remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And it goes a little further than that. Let me cite you the whole statute here, because that's just its abbreviated form. Exodus chapter 20 is where you'll find the Ten Commandments. And the fourth commandment here, it says in verse 8, this is Exodus chapter 20, verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work, but in the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you nor your son nor your daughter nor your manservant nor your maidservant nor your cattle nor your and nor a stranger that's within your gates, because in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth and sea and all that in them is, and he rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and he hallowed it. Now there's other Sabbath statutes that spell out what the penalty is. So if they catch you breaking that law, they'd kill you. It's a capital felony. Jack, do you work on Saturday? It's a capital felony, Jack. But listen to this, it gets better. Now go back here to Numbers chapter 15. And they put him in ward. Or they locked him up in jail. Or whatever it was that they held him in. I don't know if it was a brick building. I don't know if it had bars on it. Today we call those jails. They put him in ward. They restrained him. I don't know if they were using handcuffs or they tied him up with a rope or what, but they restrained him. And because it was not declared what should be done with him. And the Lord said unto Moses, the man shall surely be put to death. And all the congregation shall stone him with stones without the camp. And all the congregation brought him without the camp, and they stoned him with stones, and he died, just as the Lord commanded. Now, you know, people go to church, and they talk about Jesus and him crucified, and they get real religious and sanctimonious and sing songs and one thing and another, but did you ever read a story like that before? I mean, that's sweet Jesus did that. And he's not very kind, and he's not very gentle. And I don't think that most of you people want a justice system. Now, we used to have that here in the United States, but honest to God, I don't think you people want that. I think you want the adversarial system because it's kinder and gentler. And you could hire a lawyer. I mean, the state of Canada, you know, is not going to put you to death for working on Saturday. They're not going to put you to death for practicing sodomy. They're not going to put you to death, you know, if you go out here and you're using unjust weights and balances and credit cards and so on. I mean, they might lock you up in jail for a couple of years or something like that. They might fine you, take your property away from you, raise hell with you, but I mean, they're not going to kill you. Now, this guy that we call God over here, he's got a pretty stringent system of law. It's very, very straightforward, and Garrett wanted to know what the history of it was. So pay attention here, Garrett. Now, here's the history of our law. Our law under the justice system. We don't have any lawyers. We don't have any lawyers. What we have is a judge, and the judge asks you some questions. It's called diligent inquisition. He's going to ask you some questions. Were you picking up sticks on the Sabbath? He's not concerned with I was cold and I was picking up sticks on the Sabbath so that I could build a fire and get warm because I was freezing to death and my little children were shivering. He's not interested in your mental state. He's not concerned about whether you're intelligent or not. I know the other day they had a guy on death row and he'd killed somebody and they were real concerned about his IQ. And he said, well, my God, this guy's IQ is only 90. Can we put a man to death whose IQ is only 90? Under the Mosaic law, nobody really gives a rat's ass whether you're smart or dumb. What we really are concerned about is did you do the act or not? Now, today, you know, if some guy goes out and murders somebody, we want to inquire as to whether or not he was sane or not. You know, what was his problem? And so the lawyer comes in, and he's an advocate. See, adversarial system, he's an advocate here, and he says, well, wait a minute, I don't think we should put this guy to death. I think that he was insane at the time. He wasn't rational. You know, I'd buy into that. I don't think people that run around killing other people are very rational. I think that's kind of an irrational act, running around killing people, but, you know, they do it all the time. And so God is not really concerned about whether or not you were mentally stable or whether or not your IQ could cross 100. We're just interested in, well, are you the guy that did that? And once we find out that you're the guy that did it, well, now we need to go to the next step. Well, what is the penalty? And the penalty is death. All right, if the penalty is death, how do we kill him? You stone him with stones. Okay, now we know he's guilty. We know the penalty is death, and we know that the method of execution is to stone him. So we're going to take you out and stone you to death. And we're never going to go to the issues of your IQ, your mental state at the time you committed the act, or whether or not you were cold. It's irrelevant. See how simple that is? Now, that's the justice system. And you people are sitting here saying you want justice? You're going to get justice one of these days, but I'm not sure that justice is what you're really looking for. Now, George Bush promises you something that's kinder and gentler. See, people naturally like to commit adultery because it feels good. People like to steal because it's easier than work. God comes along and says, no, I don't want that. I don't want adultery and I don't want theft. And we're going to come up with some penalties. We're going to penalize you for doing that. We're going to fine you. We're going to jail you. We're going to kill you. We're going to do something to stop it. Now, under the justice system, you don't have very much crime. And then here's why. See, if you've got a law that says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy and don't do any work on the Sabbath day, and you kill everybody that's a Sabbath breaker, there's only one of two possible conclusions that can come out of this law if we enforce it. Number one, there's nobody left alive to throw rocks anymore because we have stoned everybody to death for breaking the Sabbath. Or there's a second possibility. After you've stoned three or four of them, everybody else is going to stop doing that. Now, we got a little problem here in this country with drunk drivers. We never used to have a problem with drunk drivers. My daddy was a drunk driver. My dad used to drive all the time. There was a time in this country when we didn't have a law against drunk driving. Nobody cared whether you were driving sober or driving drunk. In the Bible, there's no law that prohibits drunk driving. God does not care if you're just roaring drunk driving down the road at 99.5 miles an hour. Doesn't give a rat's rectum. Isn't that peculiar? He's real concerned about you picking up sticks on Saturday, but he doesn't care whether you're driving down the road drunk. Now, Garrett, you wanted to know what the history of the law is. You want to see some of the differences in the law. It's very simple. It's what we call a principle of law. If you're driving down the road drunk and you don't cause anybody any damage, what difference does it make? But if you're driving down the road sober and you run somebody off the road and you cause him a damage, what difference does it make whether you were sober or drunk? You still caused the guy a damage. Quick story. There's a case down in New Mexico. Real classic case. We learned these in law school. This guy's a farmer and he's driving his beat up old pickup home. He's drunk. He's got a half pint in his hip pocket. He's sucking on the way home. And he's driving down the road and a terrible accident occurs. A doctor with his wife and two teenage girls on holiday from I think it was San Francisco, California, driving through New Mexico on their way to Texas to visit relatives on holiday. There's this terrible head-on accident. And the doctor, his wife, and the two girls are killed, dead. And this old drunk farmer, he survived the crash. Isn't that the way of it? Well, anyway, he recovered from his injuries, and they prosecuted him and tried him for manslaughter and convicted him and threw him to prison for drunk driving. And I'm sure that most of you are sitting out there saying, right on, we want to stop drunk drivers. Okay, but here's the rest of the story, as old Paul Harvey would say. The accident occurred because the doctor, who had been driving nonstop from San Francisco, fell asleep at the wheel, crossed the center line, and crashed into the farmer. You want justice? Justice isn't locking the farmer up because he's drunk driving. Justice would be pay the farmer for his damages. He didn't cause the accident. But you see, under the civil law, we say, well, it doesn't make any difference. You see, he's got a driver's license, and he agreed that he wouldn't drive drunk. And this is what we call contributory negligence. And so we can get real fancy here. We can call a lawyer in, and we can argue contributory negligence. We can argue breach of contract. We can argue breach of fiduciary responsibility or obligation, and we can hang it on the farmer. Strict liability. He'll do it with a driver's license. And there you are. But it's not justice. That's not justice. It's the adversarial system. It's the Roman civil law. It's the way we do things today. I'm not complaining about it. I know how the system works. I know why it works that way, and I can handle it. Most people can't, and obviously you can't handle that, Jack. And you're saying, I'm not getting justice. Jack, you don't want justice. You're a criminal. Now, when you stop breaking the law and you stop your criminal activity, then I think the justice system might work a lot better for you because you can stay out of a lot more trouble than you can get out of. Hang on a minute. I got to give you a reminder here. I get wound up and I get excited, and then I forget to give you this reminder, and if I don't, the FCC and everybody else can get on you. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like one, then call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967, talking about lawyers. Now, Garrett over here wants to know some things like the history of how our legal system was adopted or adapted using parts of the European system. Well, you probably read some history concerning Magna Carta. You see, the princes that brought King John out to Runnymede, they were called common law freemen. And the king was encroaching upon their common law, okay, what is the common law? Common law. Well, there's probably about as many ideas concerning the common law as there are people to espouse those various and sundry ideas. Common law. It's the law of the commoners. Now, over in 1 Samuel chapter 8, going back to the history of it all, in 1 Samuel chapter 8, The people said, we want a king like all the nations around us. The people said, we want to change our law, and we want to change our God at the same time. Because that's what God explained to him. He said, in 1 Samuel chapter 8, you got to write this down. It's kind of a pivotal chapter in our history. He said, when you change your law, you change your God. When you change your God, you change your law. Now, we Americans, we adopted our Constitution with 22 principles of the Ten Commandments contained in our federal Constitution. The intent was that this Constitution is for a moral people, a moral Christian people. Now, as time went on, we brought in every pagan from around the world. We've brought in 7 million Muslims with their Muslim religion, and we've brought in all these Orientals, you know, we got millions of those over here, and we were told not to do that. This is our inheritance here. And this inheritance here, you prodigal sons, is not for the Chinese, and it's not for the Mexicans, and it's not for the Indians or anybody else. It was for the Israelites, and with specificity, Ephraim and Manasseh. And with greater specificity for Manasseh. But, you know, we decided that we wanted a pluralistic society, that we wanted people to come in here from all around the world, that we wanted Jews and Gentiles, and we wanted Christians and Muslims, and we wanted every race and nationality and religion that we could come up with. Okay, now you got it. And, of course, the Jews, they object to Christianity, and the Muslims object to Judaism. And, in fact, the Jews and the Muslims hate each other. And you got those factions in here. And you've got all of these Christians and Buddhists and Hindus and all these other guys over here. And so, under our Constitution, you have to treat everybody fair and square, right? Well, then you can't teach the Ten Commandments in public school because the Muslims object to it. You can't teach the kind of morality that comes from the Bible because those people don't use the Bible, they use the Quran. Or you can't teach this or that or something else. And so what you have here is gridlock. You're down to where you've got gridlock. That gridlock carries over into the society. It carries over into economics. It carries over into social contexts and social problems that develop, you know, like integration and segregation and renting to different nationalities or races of people or selling them or serving them in restaurants. It spills over into the judicial system, and the judge has to come up with a solution to this problem. The problem wasn't created by the judges. It was created by your Congress. You get 20 million illegal aliens in the country, primarily from Latin America. It's not the problem created by the courts, but it's going to be the courts that everybody's going to blame for the solution, which, you know, ultimately at some point is going to come to the fore. At some point in time, it has to be brought up and the problem solved, and it'll be a judge that does it, and then he'll get the blame for it. The blame belongs to the president and the Congress. They're not enforcing the laws, and we're not practicing the Ten Commandments, and we're not practicing the laws of God. And we stopped doing that about 1000 BC. This isn't something new, Garrett, that just came up in the last week or 10 days, or the last administration, or the last 10 or 20 years. It's been going on for thousands of years. We came to a conclusion years ago that God didn't know what he was talking about, and we're out here to fix his mistakes. And that's why we have a parliament. That's why we have a Congress. That's why we have legislators and legislatures. It's to change the laws that God gave us. And that in itself is against the law because in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, write it down, Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, twice, two statutes. He says, don't add to this law and don't take away from it. Don't add to it and don't take away from it. Boys and girls, the only purpose for legislatures is to alter, reform, amend, or abolish the law of God. They don't serve any other purpose. And you vote these guys into office. Jack, you voted these guys into office. You weren't satisfied with tithing. You had to have an income tax. Now, if you want to remedy that, why don't you get the hell out of Dodge? Start practicing the Ten Commandments and stop practicing the law of Canaan. That's a wild new concept, I know, but I think if you would entertain that idea, and if you'd think it through a little bit, practice the Ten Commandments and stop practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Practice the law of God and don't practice the law of Canaan. I think you'll get along a lot better. And by the way, The Constitution of Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States guarantees you the right to obey God and keep his commandments. God always makes sure that it's not impossible, difficult, but not impossible, to obey his law. And then finally you said they're a den of vipers and they cannot and will not play fair. Jack, wake up and smell the coffee. We're not here to play fair. We're here to beat you. And if we have to cheat to beat you, then that's what we're going to do. Anybody that thinks that the judicial system is fair has got his head up the wrong end of his anatomy. Your job is to make sure that you play this game and play it by the rules. Now, you have to practice all the laws of Canada, practice all the laws of God, and all the laws of your state or province, I guess that's British Columbia, and do all three at the same time, flawlessly. Flawlessly. And you're going to find that when you're practicing the law of God, you won't be in violation of the law of Canada. Once in a great, great while, it does come up, like the case of Daniel in the lion's den, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. once in a great, great while, a conflict develops between the law of God and the law of the state. It's not often, but it does happen. All right, now here's the solution. Whenever you have a problem between the law of God and the law of the state, you practice the law of God and you tell the state to kiss your coo. Oh, no, it's kiss your grits. That's right. Kiss your grits. And the state then will arrest you, and they will do something bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil to you, and God, the God of heaven, will bail you out of it. Let me show you that quickly before I run out of time. It's in Exodus 23, 20. This is what you want. In Exodus 23, 22, he says, "But if you will indeed obey his voice, obey the voice of Michael the archangel, and do all that I speak, then I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. My angel shall go in before you and bring you in under the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hivites, and Jebusites, and I'll cut them off." Anybody messing with you, Jack, is messing with God himself. And that's the way the game's played. And if you like it, fine. If you don't like it, fine. It's the way life is. Now, that's the history of it. It goes back to 1000 B.C. Now, the law in Anglo-Saxon administration starts with Moses. Comes on down to Samuel about 1000 B.C., about 300 years later. People said they wanted a king, and life has never been the same for us Anglo-Saxons from that day forward. We rejected God, and he told us plainly in verse 19, he said, "You'll cry out to me in that day. Jack, you're crying out now in this day." And he said, "I ain't going to hear it." So you don't need to pray to Jesus. You don't need to get excited about getting real religious now, because that isn't going to solve your problem. But here is a solution. Here is the solution. You change your law. You go back to the Ten Commandments and the law of God and tell the state to kiss off. Now, that does not mean that you can violate the laws of the state. But here again, you know, if you practice the law of God, you're going to be practicing with gold and silver coin, and you Canadians have gold and silver coin. You'll be dealing in property. Stop dealing in income. Stop dealing in government-granted privileges. Stand on your own 2 feet for a change. Support yourself. I know it's a wild new idea, but try it out, and I think you'll like it. Hey, I'm right out of time. We'll have to take this up again next time. We've got one more program to do on this series called The Lawyers over here, and we'll take it up and talk a little bit more about this thing of the history of the lawyers. Where did these guys come from, anyway? All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review brought to you by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world over the Internet 7 days a week also. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We're going to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, until then. Thanks for listening, and good night, friends.